Blog Talk Radio.
Our community have become toxic waste, and those in high places are planning to remove the toxic waste. And while we flitter and live this frivolous, foolish life, seeking pleasure from our bodies and pleasure from the bodies of others, and seeking to be famous and wealthy in this world, to be used by the power to make our people think that if you go to school and work hard, you too can be successful. That's a lie. I don't give a damn how many of you go to school and work hard. They select a few out of the mass to deceive the rest that this house is not your house. And you are going to have to think about a house of your own, because white America, listen to me good, man, cannot support you any longer. White America cannot give jobs to her millions of unemployed, much less ours. Did you hear me? Elijah Muhammad told us in the 60s we should pool our resources and get farmland, because there is no freedom without land. You remember those teachings? He said that the time of separation had come, and that we are going to have to think about building a nation of our own. You, in the 60s, you were ready to say it's nation time. You don't say that no more, because you have been deceived into thinking that inclusion into this is your salvation. This that you want to be included in has no future. None.
Greetings and assalamu alaikum. Welcome to tonight's edition of the Time to Leave Blog Talk Radio Show. As you heard the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan say, we need to find a house of our own. And that's what we discuss on the Time to Leave Blog Talk Radio Show. We don't discuss why we need to form our own communities. We don't discuss if we should or if we shouldn't form our own communities. We discuss how. How do we start to form our own communities? We discuss what can we do to prepare ourselves. What can I do to prepare myself to build a community that's controlled and supported by like-minded black people? That's what the Time to Leave movement is about, and that's what we're talking about on this show. So tell your friends, call in, tell them the phone number, that we're going to have a dynamic show. We're going to talk to our guests tonight, are actually brothers and sisters, a brother and a sister, that actually have lived what we're trying to do with the Time to Leave movement. They live, and not necessarily by a choice of their own, but they were forced because they were descendants of slaves that were kidnapped, and they were made to live in a separate society. We're talking about Africatown, Alabama, and we're blessed to have on our show tonight a brother and our sister that are well qualified to share with us the legacy of Africatown, so that we can benefit from their experience, we can benefit from their knowledge, and we can hear what struggles they faced, what joys they've had, and what they can share with us, so that we can benefit from their experience and their knowledge. So So I'm going to open the lines now for Sister Joycelyn Davis and Brother Joe Womack. Sister Joycelyn and Brother Joe, can you hear me? Good evening. Good evening.
Yes, I can hear you. Yes.
Good evening.
Okay. Well, we're quite honored to have you on our show. Basically, we're going to, what I'm looking forward to doing is hearing from you all. And as I said to you earlier, I'm sure you all have had to explain Africatown probably hundreds of times, but you probably know that still, even though you may have explained it to people over hundreds of times, the majority of our people aren't familiar with it. And so we're not going to make any assumptions about our audience. We're going to ask you, I'm going to ask you, if you could go ahead and introduce yourself and talk about how are you personally involved in Africatown, and then tell us a little bit about Africatown, and then we can discuss a few key points like, you know, what's the status of Africatown now? You know, how are you planning to continue to for the growth and health of Africatown? And we'll take a few questions from audience.
Okay, let me start off first, and then I'll let Joycelyn. She's got a real personal connection to the community. I'm a retired Marine Major Joe Womack, and Africatown is the place where the last recorded shipment of slaves to come into this country landed in Mobile, Alabama, in 1860, and this was about just a little bit over 50 years after the slave trade had been abolished. You know, slavery itself was still legal, but the slave trade, bringing slaves over to this country from Africa, was abolished in 1808. We had a rich plantation owner and businessman and shipbuilder here in Mobile who owned a lot of land in the area. Made a bet one evening down at the casino on the riverboats back in 1859 that he could bring slaves into this a boatload of slaves in this country, and the government would never catch him. Well, he bet $100,000, which is today's term about $2.5 million. So it was a serious bet, and so he crafted a boat. He was a shipbuilder. He went over to Benin. And loaded 110 captured Africans and brought them back to this country, and they landed in 1860. And they tried to bring them, they offloaded them and burned the ship. And the government brought him and Captain Foster, who was the captain of the boat, to trial, but they didn't find them guilty. They found them innocent. And so those group, most of them settled in the Mobile area. Some of them went elsewhere, and they were sold off to various landowners throughout the state, and Captain Foster took 10 of them back to Mississippi. And of course, the Civil War ended in 1865, so they weren't slaves for very long. And so they were different than the blacks who were born into slavery. So they knew the value of land. They wanted their own land. First of all, they wanted to go back to Africa, but they weren't allowed to go back. They didn't have the money to transport themselves back. And so they knew the value of land, and so they began to work in the plantation owner's sawmill. And over a period of time, they made up to $1 a day, but they charged them $2 a week for the privilege of working. So they purchased land in the area, and they formed their own incorporated area, and they called it Africatown. So it was the first incorporated area in this country where people that incorporated were former slaves. And so I heard you earlier talking about owning your own property. They knew that. They knew the value of land, whereas someone born in this country didn't really have that same value. Most of them, right, after slavery, just settled and sharecropped former slave owners' land. But they actually purchased their land, and it's still here today. And they built their they built the school. They gave part of their land. These people didn't have much money, but they gave part of the land to the school system to build a school on their land. And the school system still owns that land today. And the school eventually evolved into Mobile County Training School, which became the first training school for blacks in the state of Alabama. But after it was certified a year later, it mysteriously burned down. So they solicited Booker T. Washington and Julius Rosenwald. Julius Rosenwald was was the first CEO of Sears and Roebuck, and Julius Rosenwald supplied the money, and Booker T. supplied the knowledge, and together they built over 5,000 schools educating black former black slaves throughout the Southeast. Over 5,000 schools, and our school was one of them. And right now, our school is the only school that still remains that's educating black kids every day through the public school system from those 5,000 schools. So it has a rich history, and land and ownership is very important to them and to the people of the community. And there's some other things I will talk about, but I'll just let Joycelyn explain to you her relationship to the community.
Man, before Sister Joycelyn, before you get on, I just want to say that everything you said, Brother Womack, that just sends chills up my back, knowing that black people for all these years have been able to function and to not just function but to build independently. And this is a time where, you know, we as black people, generally speaking, not all black people, of course, we really don't think we can do things to affect a change in our lives without involving white people of means. And so other people, other cultures, you got your Asians, you got your Hispanics, you got your Islanders, they come here and they set up and they just look to themselves to improve their reality. And so stories like this just is very encouraging to me, and I know others will call in and have a similar reaction as well. So, Sister, if you could go ahead and tell us about you yourself and your relationship to Africatown.
Well, my name is Joycelyn Davis. I am a direct descendant of those brave slaves that came over on the Clotilda. I come through the lineage of Charlie Lewis, and I know a lot of people may be familiar with Cudjoe Lewis, but I came through the lineage of Charlie Lewis, which was his brother. He was one of the oldest to be brought over on the Clotilda. And Charlie Lewis was one of those brave slaves that was able to buy land, and he bought land, and it's about six families that still live on their property today, my family, and we call it Lewis's Quarters.
Wow.
So I've come from a deep, deep, rich history of the Clotilda, of those slaves. Just recently I found out that Questlove traced his lineage back to Africatown. So I'm very excited about that. We want people to know more about Africatown. We have great, rich history. And also they founded a church, Union Baptist, those slaves. They built a church, and just as Joe said, that they built a school. And also we have a historical cemetery that faces east. And it faces east because, you know, they wanted to go back to Africa. So the cemetery faces east. Faces towards Africa. They wanted to go back home so bad, and they were told no, that they couldn't go back home. So, you know, they decided to make Africatown their own home.
Wow, that's absolutely fascinating. I know that in the little reading I did, I know that right now that Africatown has faced some environmental problems in regards to its growth and the state and its sustenance. Can you talk about, I know that there was the paper company was, I think it was the Scott Paper Company, was there, and it polluted the area and then it left. How's the rebuilding process going right now?
Well, Africatown, you mentioned it. It's bordered on three sides by water. You know, it's interesting. You have the city of Mobile, and to the south of Mobile, you have Dog River community with million-dollar homes on the river, and then north of Mobile you have Africatown with houses that are, you know, barely worth that much on the river, and Africatown is part of the Tensaw River Delta, which is protected by the National Wildlife Association, but this one little section that's owned primarily by blacks was not made protected. So So industry was able to move in, just like people like water, industry like water too, because they want to pollute it. And so International Paper and Scott Paper Company, amongst others, those are two large ones, moved into the area. And at one time, the community of Africatown, which is about 5 square miles, had about 15,000 residents. And most of them worked in the mills. And none of them got rich, but, you know, they were able to support their families. But the mills polluted. You know, that the pollution laws back then weren't many of any. And so we had the thick, what we call ash, falling from the two smokestacks that International Paper Company emitted. And it was like watching snow in July. And if you bought a brand new car and you didn't wash it at least 4 or 5 times a week, it will begin rusting out after 3 years. And if you if your mother was washing her clothes, no one had a dryer, so they hang the clothes out on the line for the sun to dry. If that ash started falling, you have to run and help your mother take the clothes off the line because if that ash got in, she had to rewash them. It was just that thick, and no one ever told us that this stuff was dangerous. You know, as a little kid running around, you eating a sandwich, and that stuff get on your sandwich, you just brush it off and continue eating because you wasn't getting another sandwich that day. And so we played on the ball fields and stuff, but when Clinton came into office in the early 90s, the pollution control laws began to change, and so the EPA, after investigation, gave International Paper and Scott a mandate. Either they spend millions of dollars to update their pollution control facilities or they leave. Well, they said, we'll leave. So it took them about 5 or 6 years, but they finally left in 2000. And since that time, you know, some people, employees left with them, but Africatown has gone down from 15,000 people to now roughly maybe about 2,000 or 3,000. And so we got just as many vacant houses in the area as houses with people in it. You know, of course, okay. We got houses nobody in it. They're gonna eventually just fall in. And so we got a state of disrepair in a lot of the houses. But we're trying to bring things back. We were put on the National Register for Historical Places in 2012, and we through the efforts of people like yourself on this radio program, we're getting the word out because, like you said earlier, not a lot of people knew about Africa, not even a lot of people around this Mobile area because it wasn't taught in the school.
Okay. Yes, sir, but thanks for sharing that with us. Now, one of the things is, on the more positive side, Gatown is still here, where there's plenty of other examples of black communities that is no longer here due to racism, due to economics, due to all kinds of factors. So what can you attribute are some of the underlying causes that have kept Africatown still in existence?
A strong commitment from the residents in the area to maintain their land. And Mobile has a pretty good zoning ordinance, and that it in order for them to change zones from residential to industrial, it has to go through a process which includes involving the residents and eventually being voted on by the council. And the residents have always showed up in masses when someone tried to rezone an area for industrial purposes, because we still have a lot of elderly people there who remember the old days, who remember how bad it was, who remember that smell, and you got people like myself and others who are over the age of 65. We're finding out that a lot of people who were born after 1945 are gone. They're no longer here. They're dead. And my class just had recently its 50th reunion, and we had about 150 graduates, and over 50 of them are gone, and another 50 of them are in poor health. and the Delta are either heart related or cancer related. And so when they try to bring some industry back into the area, people say, you know, we've been through this before. We don't want to go through this again with our children. Well, why do you keep bringing this stuff out here to us? You have other areas to put this stuff. We rely on the Environmental Justice Act, which basically they say that same thing. You can't keep pushing this pollution, and pollution is just another word for poison. That's all it is.
Okay. Yes, sir.
You can't keep feeding these people poison because you can put it somewhere else. This group, this community has paid its dues. So why do you keep putting them through this?
Yes, sir. I appreciate you answering that question. So in terms of going forward with the future of Africatown, if there are, what opportunities do you have other than bringing in big industry to maintain the economic reality for the residents and people who may be interested in relocating to Africatown?
Well, this city says that it want to push tourism, and Africatown is one of the biggest, could be one of the biggest tourist spots in the state if done properly, because it has the rich history and the tradition, and some historical sites. Joshua mentioned the church and the cemetery and the school and different other areas, and it still has some land available, some houses available if people want to purchase them and fix them up. And it still has a good number of the residents are descendants, and they have a lot to add to the flavor of the community. And I'll let Joshua speak more about the descendants, and she's a direct center. She's really involved in the community, and she's created a couple of events to make things happen around the community.
Right. We just want people to know more about Africatown and those descendants. And we see that Common has bought the rights to the book Barracoon. I don't know if you're familiar with that book.
No. Tell us a little bit about it.
Oh, okay. Well, there are four books that have been written on the story of the Clotilde in Africatown. The first book was written in 1914 by Emma Langdon Roach. And you also have The Slave Ship Clotilde by Dr. Natalie Robinson. You have Dreams of Africa in Alabama by Sylvia Duell. And Barracoon by Zora Neale Hurston. That was the last book to be written. And Common, the actor / rapper, has bought the rights to Barracoon. So we want people to be more familiar with Africatown, read upon Africatown. You know, people, you know, we have the internet, or, you know, you can learn more about it. Just like Joe was saying recently, I held a festival with help from others to let people know more about it, because if you read anything about Africatown, you hear more about Cudjoe Lewis. But as Joe stated, there were 110 that came over. So we know that, you know, he didn't come by himself. There were others who helped form our church, which was Charlotte Lewis, Peter Lee, Orsa Kibbe, and Polly Allen. Those individuals were very instrumental in forming Africatown. So we just want people to, those people who don't know anything about Africatown, if they can just read about it, come and visit us. We're more than happy and welcome to show you guys some type of Southern hospitality and learn more about Africatown.
Yeah, I know you have the festival in February. Is there any other festivals or events that you have throughout the year?
Well, we're getting ready for a Juneteenth celebration.
Okay.
That's our next event. And we also have a picnic in September with all the families. Those families who moved away, those families that are still there, we come and we have this big, huge picnic. It's like homecoming. We have that in September.
Sounds like a big family reunion.
Oh, it is a big family reunion. Yes. Yes, it's really nice.
Yes, ma'am. So if you could talk about what were some of the biggest challenges that the founders of Africa Town faced when they were trying to incorporate their town and protect their culture?
Well, you know, they were not welcome. They were called savages, you know, by your own people. I mean, you know, people, you know, didn't know them, and they were called savages. They really had to fight, you know, for their own, you know, to be accepted, you know, if it matters, you know, for a better word.
Well,
they
wait,
had to
hold
fight.
On. So you said that their own people called them savages.
Right. And not the people that came over with them, the people that were already here.
Right.
They called them savages.
Wow. They're their own family. They're just a couple of generations away from them. And wow.
Right, exactly. And, you know, that's just for a lack of knowledge. They were, you know, they didn't, you know,
right.
They weren't knowledgeable. So, you know, they went through, just like Joe was saying, they worked for a dollar. They had to pay $2 to their owners, but they survived. And that's the thing about what makes me so proud of my ancestors, that they survived. And if you can imagine that trip from Africa all the way to Alabama, you know, just being on that ship, just some people didn't make it. But to know
right.
that my great-great-grandfather six times made it, you know, I don't know if I could have made it. But just to know that they survived and was able to come and buy their own land, build a church, and do all the build a school and do all these different things, that just let me know I can do anything. You know, when I think I can't, they lived off of less. When I think I need more of this, more money, new car, new business, they didn't have all the resources that we had. And they didn't make the money that we make today, but they survived. So,
wow, it makes you think, yes, ma'am. It makes you think, what, you know, where would they want to see us today? You know, what is our responsibility, you know, to just, you know, kind of get a, you know, live happily after and trying to be assimilated into just a general American life? Or is it to build a reality for ourselves, to be able to continue to honor them and to, you know, black people in general having come from, you know, earlier generations of slaves, you know, what is it that we owe them? As a, you know, in addition, or not, instead of this American culture, and so we're the Time to Leave movement. We say we need to build our own societies. We have to do just like other cultures are doing, you know. And so
we have
look,
to honor
we look
them.
At. Oh yeah, we look at the
we
y'all,
have to
y'all
honor them.
As an example.
Yeah, we have to honor them because they went through so much. And then the title of the festival was Spirit of Our Ancestors. I mean, I truly believe. And the ancestors, I wake up with them every morning. I take them with me everywhere I go. They speak to me. I speak to them. So, you know, we have to honor them. We have to honor and keep the legacy going, keep the history going. I mean, Africa Town is so rich in history, and I can't believe that people still to this day don't know about Africa Town. I know, you know, it's Alabama, but, you know, we wanted to get out because, just like I was saying before, I saw on Finding Your Roots that Questlove found his roots through Africa Town. He and I have the same lineage, and I've been trying to reach
wow.
out to him. And with Common buying the rights to Barracoon, we want to reach out to him to see, you know, what are his plans with the story, because if the story is told, because this is our own roots, this is our own roots. I want the story to be told from the very beginning and an ending to be as Barracoon, because Barracoon is when Zora Neale came to Mobile and she interviewed with Cudjoe Lewis, which he was the one to live the longest. But I know people say that he was the last known survivor. But, you know, I want to change that narrative because he was one of the last known. There were others who came. Of course, we know there were others who came with him.
Right, right. Well, we're going to pause for a station identification break. Brothers and sisters, we're listening to Brother Joe Womack and Sister Joycelyn Davis from Africa Town, and we want to open up the line. So if you're listening to this and if you're enjoying it and you have a question or comment, please press the 1 on your dial so that I can recognize you and open your line. Once again, press the 1 on your dial to make a comment or to ask a question to our guests to engage in this wonderful conversation. Okay, so continuing forward. So there, I see now, Brother Joe, you are a member of a board or organization that is promoting, or is Sister Joyce promoting Africatown and tourism to Africatown?
Yes. Well, there are several organizations, but I believe the one you referred to has the acronym of CHESS, C-H-E-S-S, which stands for Clean, Healthy, Educated, Safe, and Sustainable. And those are the purpose and the mission that we work for our community.
Okay.
We want it clean, not just the appearance, but clean air, clean water, free of toxic odor, free of anything that can harm the residents of the community.
Yes, sir.
Better education for our children. Healthy environment, healthy people, healthy education, safe and sustainable. You know, the community was incorporated in 1870, and so we'd like for it to be around forever. And we don't want to see the industry come in and bulldoze down the houses, and one day, 50 years from now, the only thing you'll see from the community itself is just a marker that says Africatown was here. So that's what we are fighting against, the industrialization of the area. I said earlier, of course, it was incorporated, but it finally merged with the city of Mobile in the early 60s. And because up until that time, there was no running water, and the streets were not paved, and no sewer. So Mobile promised to give them water, sewer, and paved the street. And so the residents voted to become part of Mobile. At the same time, you had those two big paper mills that were sitting out there, and because they were in Africatown, they were not paying any city taxes. They were paying county taxes, but no city taxes. So that was the real thing that the city wanted. But after that time, when they paved the streets gave them water and sewer, they didn't do much else. That was pretty much it. And over a period of time, they've been changing the zoning in the surrounding areas around Africatown, moving in industry that have not been really good for the residents and for the community. And in a way, they've been basically putting profit over people. We know that industry would do that if you let them.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And it looks like we have a caller that wants to ask a question, make a comment. Caller with the last four digits, 6356. What is your name and where are you calling from?
Actually, my name is Eric Houston, and I'm calling from, I'm in New Mexico now, but I live in Arizona, and I met a brother, Khalil, in Arizona, and he was telling me, but I moved to Arizona from Memphis, Tennessee, and I had heard nothing about Africatown. Where is it near?
It's near, it's in within the city limits of Mobile, Alabama, on the Gulf Coast.
I was wondering,
it's on the Gulf Coast and an hour away from Biloxi, Mississippi, going west, and an hour away from Pensacola going north. Going east.
Yep, but you said it's in the district of Mobile?
It's in the city limits of Mobile, yes.
Okay, you see, being from Memphis, Tennessee, I've been down to Biloxi. Well, actually, I've been through Mobile quite a few times because I drive a truck.
Okay.
But is it any way that you can get the information out about where it is and, I mean, just so people can know about Africatown? Because if I had known, I would have probably, I wanted to move out of Memphis, and if I'd have known, I probably would have moved that way versus moving out west. But like I said, I didn't know anything about it, and I didn't find out about it until I had already moved out to Arizona.
Yeah, that's what we're trying to do now, trying to get the word out because actually the one of the things that the early that throws off the ship's face was suppression. Now George Lynn mentioned that they were sort of ostracized even by the other blacks, the ones that were born into slavery. But at the same time, they were revealed by those blacks because a lot of people started coming into Africatown after the Civil War because they heard about these Africans down there in Mobile doing great things, you know, buying their own land, you know. So they wanted to go down, and that's one reason why the community sort of swelled initially. But at the same time, the folks that brought them over, an illegal shipment, and they owned all of the land around where they lived. And that's who they purchased the land from also, those people. And they sort of, in a way, suppressed them from even talking about themselves, even talking much. And that went on for years. There have been rumors about whenever there's a special election or something, representative of those families would actually come into the board meeting of the local churches and say, you have your people vote this way. I'm going to take this land around your church and I'm going to build a factory right up to your front door. And so this information was not taught in the local schools. It should have. There were very few people in the community that talked about it. I was fortunate enough to go to a church where we had a man named Henry Williams, who also wrote a book about Africatown. He was our historian, and he taught Sunday school, and he would talk about this at least once a month. And my grandfather was superintendent of the Sunday school, so he let him talk. He'd get up there and talk. People try to shut him up, and my granddad said, "Let him talk." And so he actually talked a lot about it. And so I live across the street from the man we consider the first millionaire in Africatown, Nelson Adams. And so they used to hold a lot of community meetings at my granddad's house. And as a 5-year-old, I'd be sitting up under the table just listening. And I retained some of that stuff. But that was an intimidation factor. And the word about Africatown really did not get out. You mentioned you was in Memphis, and Jocelyn mentioned her relative, Questlove, from a Jimmy Fallon show, the musician. And when his folks came up to Memphis from Africatown, his great granddad, and I think he was born around Memphis, and so he didn't know anything about that, but the information has been suppressed, and thank goodness for the internet. So when we started this in 2012, when the Africatown was put on the National Register for Historical Places, we wanted to get the word out, and we used the internet, because the city was not promoting the area. The city, you know, two things I found out about Mobile, they won't commit and they won't share. You know, and commitment means not just talking about it. Commitment means put some money behind what you're saying. And, of course, sharing, you know, the color of money is not black and white, it's green. And so there's a lot of money to be made, and sometimes you think somebody else is going to get that money, you won't even get involved. And that's what City of Mobile has done. I find it interesting that the city of Montgomery, Alabama, you know, erect a lynching museum, and now they can't keep people away from it. It's a lynching museum. Who ever thought that? So that's what we're trying to do, get the word out. And try to get some money into the community to rebuild these houses and to promote the community, because, you know, we get calls all the time. People say, let me know more. How can I find more information about it? And, you know, the community is here, and we're just trying to get the word out.
Yes, sir. That's why we got you on, Brother Joe. Thank you for your question, Brother Eric. All right.
Okay.
So now we're going to bring on the Time to Leave originator, Dr. Ridgely Movement. He's also the farm administrator, coordinator of Muhammad Farms and the Ministry of Agriculture. So, Dr. Ridgely, assalamu alaikum.
Melissa?
Dr. Ridgely?
There it is.
Still
can
there,
you hear me now?
Yes.
Can you hear me now?
We hear you.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Well, Ladia, greetings to your guests. I've been listening very attentively, and it was very interesting. I have one question. I keep hearing this dichotomy. Okay, you know, usually people want industry to come so the industry can provide jobs.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems that there's certain types of industries that you all don't want to come into your community. Would you talk about that, please? What type of industries have been trying to come, but that the people really don't want to come because of the environmental hazards?
Well, anything that's harmful or toxic to the community, and I mentioned earlier about International Paper and Scott,
mm-hmm.
and the harm they caused. Now, that there at one time they wanted to put, after International Paper left, they just bulldozed the top of the surface. So that vacant lot is still out there, and of course that land we found out years ago. International Paper were there for 70 years, and they never owned that land. They leased the land from the family that brought the last boatload of slaves over, and so they make their money off leasing land. So they'll lease land to the people that want to make that they can make the most money from. And a lot of times that's real hazardous industry. At one time they wanted to bring a waste disposal company out there to bring waste in from all around the world.
Mm.
And the community found that out. Okay,
wow.
Yeah, they also wanted here recently to build 50 large storage tanks for oil right across the street, though. That's where International Paper Company was, right across the Paper Mill Road. And, you know, you saw what happened recently when that storage tank blew up in Houston. Those things just ignited one another. And so with the help of some local politicians, we fought that back. So they keep bringing in this stuff that can be hazardous, can be toxic, can be dangerous. And we don't want that. We're not saying don't bring in any industry. Just don't bring in this dirty stuff, this stuff nobody else wants. You know, find something else that, you know, ask Google if they want to bring in a warehouse for storage boxes.
That's a good one.
Well, you know, thank you, man. That is so enlightening because I didn't want people to think that you all were, quote unquote, against progress. But now that you show us the type of crap they was trying to drop on you, and I think it's very important for people to understand that not all things economically are progress. In other words, there's the side effects, and you have to know what it is that you are asking for, or what they're asking you to do, as to whether it's going to be good for you in the long term or not, or whether just in the short term. So thank you so much for clarifying it. That and thank you for being on the program, and we wish you all the best of success. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks.
And thank you for your question and comment, Dr. Ridgely. We have another caller. Caller with the last four digits, 4707. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Assalamu alaikum. This is Sister Lanita from St. Louis.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
My question is the offspring from the families down there that were born like in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and for some of those who may have grown up and gone to college, do they tend to come back and settle there? Or is there like a brain drain? They call it a brain drain effect, where sometimes in an environment the children may grow up, go to school, and go and live somewhere else.
I talk about that.
I'm sorry.
No, I talk about that a lot because growing up, when you grow up and you go to college, the first thing you think about is.
Oh, somebody have a speakerphone on?
Coming back. Yes, echoing.
Is it Joyce? Yes, it's Joyce. Okay,
go ahead.
The
first thing you think about is leaving. Yes, you think about leaving and you think about not coming back. Because, like you were saying, a brain drain is, like, mobile. It's so slow. They don't see any growth. And you know, they just, they leave, some people leave and they don't come back. But we want people to come back and to, I mean, since the history is so rich and it's booming, the city is growing now, if they could just come back and see what's going on, then hopefully we can get more of those 20 and 30-year-olds to come back.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Well, that's a good question and a good answer as well. You know, and that's as we look at forming our own communities, that's the dilemma that we see as we do that. You know, picking the right industries. You know, it's not just about forming your own town. And Dr. Rizzi brought it up as well. It's about what can you do to attract people and keep them in your towns. And so, is it going to be agriculture? Is it going to be manufacturing? It could be related to your natural resources, but as you all discussed, you know, we don't want anything that's going to, you know, take advantage of our natural resources and leave us with, you know, the byproduct. So as we, you know, study and as we try to build our communities and try to maintain what we have, it's always a challenge for creativity to be able to make economic opportunities, and because the cultural links are there, the need to keep the culture is there,
mm-hmm.
the requirement to have our own belief system, and if you look at the way the world is going right now, American culture, you know, it's really going away from, you know, traditional African culture or even traditional culture that we had. Back in the old days, it's black people. You know, our values, our morals. You know, what's the definition of a man? You know, being able to take care of his family, and you know, a wife being able to, you know, raise the children and bringing offspring up that are to love our culture and legacy. And so we're seeing right now our culture and our legacy change before our eyes, and we're not doing that. And we have a caller. Caller with the last four digits, 3475. What is your name and where are you calling from?
Oh, greetings, Assalamualaikum family. This is Sister Sharon from Fort Worth, Texas. I'd like to welcome our guests, Brother Joe and Sister Jocelyn. Is that correct?
Jocelyn.
Yes.
Oh, Jocelyn, I'm so sorry. Thank you.
No, you're welcome.
And this is an eye-opener for me. I did not know about this, but this is something that I am going to delve into. And I just want to come in and thank you both for all your hard work. And I heard you talk about how proud you are to know your roots. You know, you delved mm-hmm. into finding your roots. And it is important. It's important to keep the connection of our history. That is important for growth. You know, we can't say we know ourselves if we don't know where we come from and our family mm-hmm. history, because that provides so much meaningful connection of who and what we are. So thank you so much, ma'am, and I pray for all of your success there in Alabama.
Okay, and we do encourage you to read The Slave Ship Clotilda by Dr. Nellie Robinson and also Barracoon by Zora Neale Hurston.
Thank you, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
And thank you for your call, your comments, Sister Sharon. So, yes, ma'am. So that's you know, I'm noticing that a lot of our folks are encouraged. A lot of people are encouraged to see that we can maintain and, you know, and grow and nurture our culture. And so I had another question. I know we had the school. You were talking about the school. It's the last school that's left that was put there by Booker T. Washington and the other fellow. Is there an opportunity to offer any special training or vocation at the African Town School where people would come there to get some special kind of training that could also bring revenue to the area?
Today, because it's part of the public school system. Years ago, there were special classes in masonry, brick masonry and carpentry,
mm-hmm.
Similar to a trade school. But over the, you know, I went through that in the 60s, and and it was just the primary subjects, English, social studies, math, science, and the like. Now that was a special class called diversified occupation for people that want to go out and work half a day and then spend a half a day in school. But no, today it's just a simple regular school. It's a middle school now. It used to be a high school years ago, but after the segregation in 1970, it was changed to a middle school. At the height of the community, you had 1,200 kids there at any one time, and now we average only about 200, and that's primarily because people have moved out of the area. And that was a large housing project in the area, and that's been closed down, and then we lost half the students when that was closed down. They went elsewhere. They've moved somewhere else. So to answer your question, no, that's one thing that we're trying to do with the new renewed local interest is create more training in the community. It may not be in the school, mm-hmm. but it'd be somewhere in the community to help those that want to learn a special trade.
Right, right. And this is what how we need to look at our communities. You know, we one of the communities we study and discuss on occasion is we look at the Amish communities, and a lot of times one of their number one revenue streams is their craftsmanship, the things they make. And so they
right.
make things, they sell them, and they bring revenue. It could be, carpentry or craft type products, but also foods, health foods, and stuff they bring from their land. And so, as we build our community, we're in South Georgia here. As we're making plans for our community, we're blessed to have a farm. And so we're looking at the resources in the farm, and we're trying to come up with value-added products, unique products that we can make or grow that would cause people to want to either come here or support us. And so, I like it. That's the kind of thing that would be great, for Africatown. You know, if you had a certain product or service, it's like, wow, I'm going back to Africatown. I love that last whatever it is I had.
Yeah.
I got to go to Africa to get another one of those because I can't get one of those anywhere in the world. And so, yes, sir.
Yeah. We're trying to do those sorts of things. We're sort of in the early stages of some of the things that we're trying to do. Now, you mentioned a garden. There is a community garden there. It's in an area where years ago there were rental houses in there. The land was owned by the former slave owners. And so they rented houses. Then they got out of the rental house home business, and they sold that land to Alabama Power as a right-of-way. And the community members just went out there and started farming, and right now it has the largest community garden in the state of Alabama, about 6 acres.
Wow.
They actually farm about 40 acres, and so they have plans to try to put a farmer's market over there in that area, and it's still in the planning phase, and with a little financial help, I think they may be able to do that.
Yes, sir. And we have a caller. Let's see. Caller with the last four digits, 7769. What's your name and where are you calling from?
At Kabbalah, Lover, Sister Dolores Muhammad, St. Louis.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you for calling, Sister Dolores.
Yeah, how you doing? I would like to say something. I found out my great-great-grandmother born down Alabama, 1844. That's where I found that out. And that's where they brought in the boat, sending them down to the Washington, D.C., Virginia, and start getting the black people some shots, some drugs, and separate all them people and change the all last name, send them all over the United States, and the black man built all these houses and railroad tracks and everything. That's why they took everything away from black men, because the black man made color phone, electric, everything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What part of Alabama was that? Do you remember?
I don't know what part of Alabama. We try to find out who my grandparent is. That's what we're trying to find out.
Okay.
Yeah, because I don't know. I can't find it out. I just let you know because that's where my great-great-grandma was in 1844.
Okay. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because mm-hmm. Well, some people live all over. You know, we got some people who can't move away from down there. They know what's going on. I asked the people, why y'all move to St. Louis? Why you move there? Why you move there? They can't get away from it. Because they be throwing a bomb in the house, burnt the house up. And my mother get up out the bed, climb up the fence and all that. She get up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And,
people do move away. And I understand in some type of way. I always tell people I never move. I mean, I well travel, but I never move. I'm glad I didn't move. Because I would be one of those who really wouldn't be concerned about the area and the rich history. It's like, think some of our ancestors, and not the ones who came on the coattail, they wanted us to kind of forget about, you know, what happened and how everything. But it could be celebrated. And that's why I had this festival, and that's why I want to be consistent with these festivals. We can celebrate our history. Although, you know, it was tragic how we came over. I mean, who wants to be known that they came over on a bed? But we survived all of that. You know, there was a school built, there was a church built, they bought land. So we want to celebrate our history now. It's nothing to be ashamed of anymore. We want to celebrate our history.
Oh, okay.
That's right. Well, Sister Dolores, thank you very much for your call and your comments. And so we are starting to wind down the show. Brother Womack and Sister Joycelyn, Sister Davis, if you would like to give us information on how people can either contact you or look and find out more information on the Internet, if you have a website or a Facebook page or any other way our listeners can contact you to stay in touch.
Well, if you want to find out more information about Africatown, Joycelyn mentioned the book. But the one thing you can do is just simply Google the word Africatown, and it'll take you to various places. But Africatown in Mobile, Alabama, and you can find out a lot about what happened and who the major players were. The organization I'm involved with is CHESS. You Google AfricatownCHESS.org, and you'll find out more information and how to reach me and some more information about what we're doing within the community. And there's also a website for the school there, for the Alumni Association, called it's MCTS, which stands for Mobile County Training School, MCTS. Whippets, WHIPPET, whippets.org. And that'll tell you information about the school and some of the people involved with the Alumni Association and what we're trying to do.
Well, once again, I want to express my extreme appreciation for the both of you taking time out your schedule. And as we heard from Brother Eric, you know, people still need to know about Africatown. And so I know with your tireless efforts to put that out there. And right now we've had callers call in and people listen to know more about Africatown. And so we're hoping and praying that we can spread the word. And then as you all have your events and ask for assistance, we can put it out there to people. And so we can make your community as well as other independent black communities grow, because we need to keep what we have and build more. So I want to thank both of you all for being on the show, and thank the listeners for calling in. And once again, if you need any assistance, information from us, please contact me as well. All right.
Okay.
Thank you
and
for
one
that
thing. Yes.
You're very welcome.
Yes.
You're very welcome.
Okay.
And
bye-bye.
We want to get Dr. Henry Louis Gates to cover Africatown. That could be something.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, I'm sorry. This show is over. If we can get in contact with Dr. Henry Louis Gates, that would be great.
All right. Thank you very much.
Okay. Bye.
Okay. Bye.
Tennessee. Lord, I've really been real stressed. Down and out. Colorado Springs. Razadon and Baba, they went down to Peachtree. Headliner, I challenge you to a game of horseshoes. A game of horseshoes!
Now I see the importance of history. Why my people be in the mess that they be. Many journeys to freedom made in vain by brothers on the corner playing ghetto games. I ask you, Lord, why you enlighten me without the enlightenment of all my folks. He said, cause I set myself on a quest for truth and he was there to quench my thirst. But I am still thirsty.